Accession number 27741, Reel 7.
Because they had a local cooking. Every Sunday we had a tremendous spread of curries with all the bits and pieces, traditional Ceylon style. So we didn't do too badly there. And again, we flew ashore while the ship went into the harbour in Colombo, and we carried on with practice dive bombing formations.
What did it feel like to be in a completely new theatre of war fighting at completely different enemy? Was there? Were you briefed about this?
No, we adjusted. You can remember having a game of rugby there, rather a mistake, because it took about 2 hours to cool down after it, standing under a shower. We had a certain amount of spare time. We used to go off into the town. I remember finding a lake with a rowing club. I was quite keen on rowing at school, and with another friend who also rowed at his school, and we found a rowing club with a couple of skiffs. So we used to go and take those out on this lake amongst the turtles. And of course there were beaches we could go, the Gore Face, Lavinia Beach, where we could go and have a relax with drinks of coconut milk or passion fruit juice, and would associate with those places. And then we went down to Trincomalee after a time. Before that, we did some night flying. So I did at Katakurunda, not south of Colombo, place where there was, and we did a jungle training course there, jungle survival course. We each issued with a strip of parachute. Presuming that we had been able to cut a parachute up into strips, and some twine to lash it to a couple of trees, and nothing much else, bar of chocolate I think or something, and we were taught how to make a fire and boil water inside a piece of bamboo, which you cut off below the joint and use it as a sort of kettle. I don't know what food we had. It was only 24 hours, but it was very interesting. I can still remember the bird song as we woke in the morning. Our chief enemy there were the leeches. They were absolutely dreadful. They got in everywhere. Although we covered every available part of our bodies, they just squeezed underneath. And eventually we landed up in a little local village, and the local people came out and... saw our leeches, and they said, "Oh, we'll get those off." And they started smoking cigarettes and burning them off, because we didn't have, I don't think we had any cigarettes. But I've got a picture of that happening too. They got in the most awkward places, as you can imagine. But we got back all right.
How were you regarded, do you think, by the local people? With fear or with respect or with affection?
I suppose they'd heard of the way. It was quite fairly remote, but in the jungle, middle of the jungle. Well, they didn't seem to take us to anything very unusual. I can't remember how we got home from there. Must have been picked up by the truck somewhere.
And why were you doing night flying exercises?
Well, we had to be ready to fly at night. At that time, the Japs had been threatening Colombo, threatening Ceylon, not long before we got there. I suppose we had to be part of the task force ready to defend the island, but in fact the danger seemed to drop away. And so when we went round to Trincomalee, which is on the east coast, been in the news lately, of course, because of the tsunami, it was quite safe to fly anywhere, any time. And from there we set off... In August of that year, it was planned we were going to invade Malaya or provide cover for the invasion of Malaya.
Sorry, I just wanted to go back a little bit to the night flying. What was your training for that, and how did that?
You just have to fly on the instruments, like the Link trainer, as I mentioned earlier. you had to rely completely on that, because you might not have a horizon, you see, like flying in cloud. You lose all sense of whether you're going up or down or sideways, so you rely completely on this false, this horizon, artificial horizon, which tells you what attitude you're in. And the night flying is also very important. But you do have a flare path for landing. And of course, unless you're flying over a blacked out England, you've got various lights of the towns and villages around. But then you come in on the flare path and land just as you do in the daytime, but got to be a little extra careful.
You didn't find it a problem, I
guess? No, not really, no. Mm-hmm.
So then you went on, you left Trincomalee.
We went round to Trincomalee. Again, the ship was in the harbour and we were flown off to... not always, because I remember being on board ship in the harbour at Trinco and going ashore there for afternoon picnics on the beach. But there was an airstrip, China Bay, or Nyakasura, and we spent some time there at the end of the war or more. But we were getting ready for this... attack on or invasion of Malaya through Port Swettenham.
Right.
That was going to be in August. But May, I see, I did a beach cover for Rangoon, bombing and strafing of the Mergui Peninsula, which is that peninsula going south of Burma. So we must have done a bit of operating up there. Force cover. And... Katakuran there again. So we sort of backwards and forwards a bit, by the look of it.
And where was your home port then? It would have been Trincomalee?
Well, between Trinco and Colombo, really, yes. I don't think we had a home exactly. We were just ship-based most of the time. Colombo to HMS Emperor, strafing exercise, treetops. That must have been low-flying. Sounds interesting. Trincomalee, where we got to, September. Well, this is where the war ended in August, didn't it?
That's right.
When did the bomb drop? August the 8th or 9th, was it?
Early August, I can't remember.
Well, we were back on Emperor. I remember VJ night was in Trincomalee, and all the Veery lights and everything anybody could produce was firing off into the air. That put an end to any combat. We did have...
But the encounter with the Zero that you mentioned...
Yes, I had... That must have been one of these sorties, beach cover. I think it was at the end of coming down from Rangoon. We stayed... we must have been providing cover for something for the fleet. There were four of us, four carriers, and the Japs were coming over, Zero fighters and these kamikaze, trying to get in under the defence. I was by then a flight commander, and I had a number two with me, and we were got a message over the radio saying, "Bandits." That means enemy aircraft, Angels 10, which is 10,000 feet, and the bearing. And we set off climbing up to try and meet them. But of course, starting from only 2,000 feet, they had all the advantage. And I was climbing up, quite a bit of cloud about, fortunately. I was climbing up steadily and keeping a look around. I suddenly noticed my number two had disappeared. I don't know where he'd gone. But I looked round behind me and saw a Zero coming straight down at me with his guns blazing. So I thought I'd better get out of this. Did a quick turn into his line, or into his quarter attack. I was going so slowly, he just went straight past. But I made for a cloud and went and back to the ship, because I was only one by myself, feeling very lonely. Got back to the ship and I found... everybody looking at the tailplane. I noticed a certain difficulty in landing on because the rudder had not the rudder the elevator had, hadn't responded, and climbed out of the aircraft, and there was quite a lot of it was missing. He'd evidently got my tail. I was very glad he hadn't pulled his sights up another fraction. I wouldn't have been here. But
What about your number two? What happened to him?
History never related what happened to him.
He disappeared. He never returned.
No. Oh yes, he came back, but quite why he, I can't remember how why he disappeared. Whether he scarped or what it was, I don't know. Never found out.
Wouldn't that be reported? I mean, wouldn't that sort of dereliction? Your number two disappears.
Yes, I don't know. I think I was too jittery to think about too much about it. I don't know. I really can't remember what happened, why he was, what happened to him, and why I never got an explanation. Maybe there was a perfectly good one. I don't know. But
how would you view the? How did you view the Zero as a fighter?
Oh, the Zero was had no armor plating. We had a great big armor plate behind the cockpit, so as if a shot come into the back, you would have been protected. They had none of that, so I mean they would have. But that meant that they were far more manoeuvrable. And I knew it was useless to try and engage a dogfight with a Zero in the Hellcat, which was rather heavy and wouldn't have stood a chance. Hellcat was much more useful for tactical reconnaissance, dive bombing, and air-to-ground things, but not air-to-air. Spitfire might have been a match, but even that's a bit doubtful. The Japs didn't worry too much about their pilots. They were expendable.
What about kamikaze pilots? Were they ever a threat to you?
Not to us, no. They went for the big carriers, Indomitable. They had several hits there, but we never had them actually on us. We had a few bombs dropping around us.
From
Jap aircraft. But that was in the Straits of Malacca, between Sumatra and Malaya.
How did it feel flying over jungle? And I mean,
we didn't do very much of that. It was mostly over the sea, because we took off over the sea, and very little jungle flying.
And did you, in terms of trepidation, or maybe you didn't feel trepidation, did you feel more uneasy in that theatre of war than you had in the Mediterranean, or because it was a slightly different enemy?
Yes, I mean, we knew that the Japs were had the mastery of air-to-air combat, and we didn't like the idea of being captured by them. So, but the war was sort of beginning to draw to a close, although we didn't know. Suddenly the bomb dropped on Hiroshima and we were all very relieved.
And VE Day, did anything happen on VE Day?
VE Day, that was the year before.
Oh, sorry, of course.
VJ Day. VJ Day, yes, great rejoicing. We couldn't believe it to begin with, but then came through as a gen, as we called it, a real thing, and we started celebrating. And the attack that we were going to make on Malaya through Port Swettenham and Port Darwin was a sort of occupation exercise, and the troops went ashore, but there was no opposition by then. And we steamed on down into Singapore and had a day or two there ashore. I think I only got one day ashore. Met the Bishop of Singapore, Bishop Wilson, in the cathedral there, and he'd been in the prison camp at Changi. Poor man, was very very thin, but good heart. And we were given some real Malay, the old money, the dollars, straits, Malay straits dollars. Went into a shop to buy some knickknacks for home. The Japanese currency, yen, was in the morning was almost worthless. In the evening, they were throwing it away in the gutter, for it completely lost its value. So you could buy an egg with about 10 million yen in the morning. The evening it wasn't, and we came with our reprinted notes, and the shopkeeper's eyes bulged. Where did you get this from? I hadn't seen one for 5-6 years. I think I could have bought the shop if I'd known how much they were going to value it. I just bought some chopsticks, I think.
And again, how did they regard? Were they all over you? Were they, you were the saviours.
They were very pleased, but a lot of Chinese, of course, there tradesmen. But I don't know. End of the war. We weren't actually there on ashore when the Lord Mountbatten was the CNC, and he took over the keys of the city of Singapore from the Japs. Our photographer was ashore from the ship, and he got some pictures, which I've still got, of Mountbatten striding up and the Japs looking very dejected behind him. But that was quite a... and then we steamed back again to Trinco.
Did you actually meet any Japanese? Did you see any of the prisoners? Or
no.
We didn't want to.
I don't know what happened to them. We were only ashore for one day. Didn't have much time to do anything. Just have a look around, buy a few knick-knacks.
So now we're in, remind me, September 45.
This is August 45.
Right.
It was the end of the war.
So, just if you can, what was the feeling amongst all of you combat pilots when you knew that it was over?
Well, we began to think, what are we going to do after the war? I think, we're looking ahead to demobilization, and we were each given a number, demob number, but to get home, we had a few weeks back Trincomalee, doing formation flying, and we were based at China Bay at the RAF station there. We did a long cross-country flight. The whole squadron went up to Cochin to Bangalore, Bangalore to Tambaram, Madras, and from Madras down back to China Bay, back to Colombo.
And that was just a flag-showing exercise?
Just something to do. We stayed a night in Bangalore and a night in Madras. Just had a look around, a swim.
Was there a feeling of impatience? Now it's over, let's get back, let's get on with our
lives. Well, yes and no. We were just so relieved it was all over. As far as I remember, we didn't really get to where. We did have some very good leave I had two, because I got a dysentery on one occasion, and was invalided over to the hospital ship in Trincomalee Harbour, which was a very welcome release. It was very cool. It had a wind blowing right through the ward on the deck. And then a week leave up in the hills. I went up to a place, a leave camp called the Atalawa. Unfortunately, being on my own, it wasn't quite so easy. We had been once before with the squadron. And also in the Nilgiri Hills at Uttarakhand in South India, we'd had a week's leave up there once. And it was great relief to get out of the heat and up into the hills. And the Atalawa and Bandarawella. Remember we hired bicycles, two of us, and cycled right down to the end of the railway line, Badulla, and then caught the train back with a bicycle. Wonderful country around there. But we didn't have a lot to do with the local people, except at Bandarawella there was a school, an English school, and I remember meeting the headmaster, Mr. Keeble, and his wife, and they were very kind, entertaining us.
And you, when you were sick, I was trying to think of how you were treated on the ship. You went down with dysentery on the ship, or?
Yes, I mean, the ship was very hot. The sick bay was rather airless down under I had this, unfortunately, I don't know where I'd picked it up, eaten something, I suppose. So eventually got put over onto the hospital ship, which was a great relief.
And what, I mean, in terms of health, people in the tropics, was there malaria? What kind of...
Oh, well, we had to take malaria tablets all the time. Yes, I think it was, what's the stuff made you yellow, mepocrine? Or
quinine?
No, quinine was out. It was mepocrine and paludrin, I don't know. Something. And salt. We had to take salt tablets because if you sweat a lot, you sweat out the salt as well as the liquid. Otherwise, I don't remember anything too bad. Mostly the medical thing. I had there was a dentist ashore, in a rather vicious dentist. I remember going to him for treatment. I've always had bad teeth, and he had that treatment. So yeah, most things were looked after.
So now we've, what are we, in September 45?
That's right.
It's over. No sadness, any feeling of, well, it's over, this bunch of people that I've been flying with, it's winding to an end?
It's rather strange. I have very little memories of what happened, I suppose because there was nothing very outstanding happening. The ship was filled up with aircraft to be taken back to UK, both the hangar and the flight deck, so we couldn't do any flying. And we just had to occupy ourselves for about 3 weeks. It wasn't very easy.
What did you? It was something we haven't really talked about. What did you do when you were on ship to amuse yourself? You mentioned Shove Hickney and.
Yeah, we had Monopoly and bridge. We played bridge quite a lot because that's one of the few games you can go on playing and doesn't pall. Monopoly gets very boring after you've played it several times. I was the education officer at that time, and I had to do something to do keeping troops happy with. We found some records, classical music, all sorts of music. So I used to lay on evening entertainment in the flight preparation room, anywhere where it was sort of more quiet. The wardroom wouldn't have been any good. What else did we do? Difficult to remember because we couldn't play deck hockey. Deck hockey was always a great relaxation when we had the flight deck. If the watch were cooperative, they would take the wires away, the arrestor wires, which usually lay flat on the deck, but they could fold them away, leaving the deck clear. And we made a sort of grummet out of a bit of rope, dipped it in paint, so that it was fairly hard, and had some. I remember the sticks were just bits of wood bent over at the ends. I think they weren't proper hockey sticks, but that was quite a good game. You always had to make a large number of grummets because a lot of them went over the side. You know, but that was that.
And this was exclusively for officers, I suppose.
No. Everybody joined in. I don't know whether we had a sort of league table, probably. Wardroom took on the petty officers, and the petty officers took on the mess decks and various teams. We must have had a league. But that was our chief relaxation, chief bit of exercise, plenty of running around.
What about Shove Hickney? You mentioned Shove Hickney earlier.
Oh, well, that was just in the wardroom. And people played other games as well, obviously. Dice. Liar dice was another one that people quite liked. Five poker dice, you know, and you pretend it's not there.
Was there any gambling?
Yeah, it must have been. I don't know. I didn't get mixed up in that, but I don't think gambling is encouraged at all in the Navy. I'm not sure if it's banned or whether it's... But there wasn't very much of that.
And drinking, people, you know?
Yes, but the drink's so cheap, they could, but usually only on occasions, you know, when there was something to celebrate, people would have a party. But mostly, if we were flying, anywhere near flying, we had to be sober for that. And I get the impression that it was fairly well-behaved in that respect. I think when they went ashore, if we were ever in a shore base or at a place where we could get ashore, there was a certain laxity then. People come back a bit drunk at about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Any trouble with native women or irate husbands or
no? I don't
men
remember any of that.
In brothels or
yeah,
anything.
So I'm sure there were, and the awful hooch they used to sell, the fiery stuff which was supposed to be. But I didn't touch that sort of stuff. Don't think I got beyond port and wine. I didn't like gin anyway.
What was the Navy drinks? Gin, wasn't it?
Yeah, gin and tonic, I suppose, was the favourite one.
And a tot of rum.
And rum for the mess deck, yeah, not for the officers, sadly. I like rum. But, no. Yes, toddy. The bar in the wardroom, there was a steward. Remember a senior chaplain visiting the ships, went round. He found one of the people he'd seen in the Sunday service was a steward in the bar, in the wardroom. And so he looked down and said, "How do you get this job? What are you doing in this job?" He said, "Well, I'm the only one they can trust." But no, it was just a joke, really. I think, I don't remember any rowdiness in the wardroom, really. I maybe just that I kept out of the way when it was going on, probably, because I used to go down to the cabin or go off with my one or two others like me were not entirely non-drinkers, but kept to a minimum.
So, the long voyage back to Britain, 3-week voyage.
Rather tedious.
Yes, feeling of excitement, I imagine.
Yes, and anticipation.
What was it like coming back? Where did the ship dock?
This is what I can't remember. The extraordinary thing, this was October the 18th is the last entry in my logbook, squadron formation, that was in Ceylon. I used to keep a diary quite a lot of the time, but there were gaps. And I suppose for some reason I haven't got a record of my feelings at that time, but it must have been, yes. I remember sending a telegram home saying I was on the way, kill the fatted calf or something, prodigal returns. But then I was in a group number 48, which meant that we were sent on indefinite leave. Up to 49 got indefinite leave, 50 onwards were given jobs to do. So I went to the Admiralty and said, I want to get back to university because my education was interrupted by the war. I'd left, gone straight from school. He said, well, you've got to understand you're still in Her Majesty's service and you might be called back at any point. I said, okay, well, I'm prepared to take that risk. And I had got a place at Cambridge already, so I went up to see if they could take me or wrote, I don't know, and they said, just come in January. So I went in January 46, which was, I'd missed one term already. But I think they were anxious to get all the ex-servicemen through universities. They handed out degrees right, left and centre after only a couple of years. And I certainly shouldn't have got a degree if I'd gone now. I'm in my present state or in the present standard of entry, because I don't think I'd have got any A's in higher cert.
What did it feel like returning then to civilian life? And what the whole process of being demobbed? Were you given a demob suit? Were you?
Oh, yes, yes.
We can had you remember that?
Yes, I remember the demob suit for some reason. I don't know where it was, but I remember all the demob equipment. Suit and...
What was it exactly?
Oh, it was quite a nice sort of tweed, I seem to remember. I think we were able to choose a little bit. And various other items of equipment. Bowler hat. Well, I don't not a real bowler hat, but... we were given equipment and, I suppose, a golden handshake. Well, I was still on full pay until June 46 because I was on indefinite leave, you see. So all the time I was up, there was two terms at Cambridge, Lent and then the summer term. I was still in the Navy. I remember one occasion I had to go to London to a reunion and I had put my uniform on. Came into the lecture in Katz College in Cambridge, in the geography department, in uniform, and a great sort of woo went up. Well, most of the others had been in the services as well, so there wasn't anything unusual. I mean, they'd all been in themselves. And so we had a very good time at most of these ex-servicemen, particularly in the boat club, because... we were all a little bit older than the average student. The ones, we were a mixture. Some had just come straight from school, like they used to. And we obviously were in the early 20s, 23, 24. I remember a notice going up on the college notice board Gentlemen under the age of 18 may collect their bananas from the college office. Because bananas were only for young people in those days. And of course rationing was still in. We had half a loaf of bread a day and quite a lot of rationing. No chocolate.
What about